always gets me in the mood. I don't know. It brings me back to misspent youth, I guess. We are going to have a fantastic show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Drive Through HR. We got Ryan Ross on today from Hogan Assessment Systems out of Tulsa, and probably going to be talking a little bit about personality. And personality assessments and the wonderful world of HR. So without any further ado, let's get Ryan on the show. Ryan, how you doing, brother?
Doing great. How are you today, William?
Well, I'm doing well. Well, we're going to probably spend 30 minutes talking about college football, but let's not do that.
I don't think either of us have anything to say
except
back and watch the national title game without our teams in it. So
that's pretty much although I really have fallen in love with the playoff. I mean, you know, to just suss it all out and let the teams kind of play it out, I think years from now we won't even remember what the BCS was.
Well, you know, I it's funny you say that. I think actually when we think about what's going on in HR in 2015, we can relate it to the college football playoffs of this year. It's all about selection, retention, the war on talent, and big data.
Well, there is a lot we could learn from sports, isn't there?
There really is. You know, so you think about the big data that supposedly went into selecting the right teams and the challenges they faced there. Same thing, I think, with HR and how HR's really got to take, I think in 2015, a lot of these themes of big data and not only make it easier for our HR and OD practitioners to use, but learn how to use it. And actually report it back into the business to where we can make some better decisions on the front line and help these business units really use the skills that we have and the data that we have in front of us from a metric perspective. And that's, you know, I think what got us the college playoff picture that we have today. I mean, those were two fantastic games that we had over the weekend. So
they were. The Oregon looked unstoppable. I don't know I don't get to watch a lot of the Pac-12 and that up-tempo offense, but they just looked unstoppable. But, all right, so here's what I want to make sure, because Hogan is one of these companies it's been around in the space, and I think a lot of people have interacted with Hogan at a conference or whatever. Do us a little bit of a favor and kind of break what you do down at Hogan, but also what Hogan's doing these days.
You bet. So at Hogan, we really focus on one thing, and that's personality-based assessment. That is using assessments that focus on an individual's characteristics that help us understand how they're going to get along with others, how they're going to try to advance themselves in their career. And we package that information into bite-sized pieces that help organizations make decisions about who to select, who to retain, who to promote, who we can move from one position into another over the course of the employee life cycle. And so it's driving what we call strategic self-awareness, both for the individual and for the organization, that really opens up people's eyes to what are the strengths, what are the challenges that I have, where do I need to develop, where do I need to skill build to make myself more effective in my job, in my life, in my career. And the nice thing is it can go beyond that. It's how can I just be a better individual. The nice thing is we spend, you know, over 70% of our lives at work, so that's where a lot of this information really comes into use. We do that both, you know, domestically and internationally. So we've got partners in 48 different countries. The assessments are in 52 different languages. So we have a real global reach when you think about organizations and how globalization's really impacted our space. And how globalization is really driving, I think, the growth of a lot of the organizations that we see across the market. And so whether you're a hiring manager that's based in Dallas, but yet you're responsible for a team in Buenos Aires, you can use the same metrics, you can use the same process, because you've got common and validated assessment tools that really are culturally sensitive, they're localized, but yet can fit into a consistent data process. It's a consistent structure that really gives you the information you need around the world to really compare people and to track their progress in a consistent manner.
I think, you know, when it all clicked for me around personality, especially with regards to Hogan, is years ago I was talking to somebody at Hogan about a safety assessment and about really understanding personality, that some people are just based on their hardwire, based on their personality, some people are just safer than others. And if you've got an instance, you know, a machine shop or something like that, and you need people that are talented, but you just, at the end of the day, you're going to have accidents and workers' compensation and things like that, you want people that are safe. They're just hardwired for safety. And it's like, it kind of, the light bulb kind of went on, like, huh. Yeah, that's how I'd want to assess in. That's how I'd want to screen in or screen out. What other, first of all, I might have paraphrased that. It's been, you know, years since that happened, so I might have that a little bit wrong. But how do you see personality assessments? How do you see them really helping people these days?
Well, you know, the way that we look at it is everyone does have these hardwire characteristics, and it's not that they're good or bad. It's just we're all different. And we're naturally attracted and we naturally fit into different types of roles. And it goes back to work that John Holland did years ago with Holland's occupational preferences. And that is people that are more outgoing, people that are more social, or that a lot of times we use the phrase extroverted when we talk about personality in the Big Five model. You know, we tend to be attracted more to social roles where we get to interact with people, where we get to, our energy and our drive is off of those interactions. Well, you know, what does that typically look like? It looks like sales roles, advertising, marketing, where we're out and about, we're meeting the public. Well, you take those same people and you put them behind the wheel of an 18-wheeler going down I-35, and what are they doing? Well, in the old days, they were constantly on their CB radio. Probably most of the callers don't even, you know, really have a concept of what's a CB radio. I mean, is that just a big cell phone? nowadays, they're on their cell phone. They're texting. And there's all these in-cab videos of drivers actually going down the road texting, having accidents. And as they look up right before they start trying to apply that brake, and you can see them grip the wheel and drop the phone, and then you see the crash on the camera. Well, it's because, hey, I'm driving 300 or 400 miles a day, whatever the DOT standards will allow, but yet I'm not getting that interaction because I've chosen the wrong career or I've been hired into the wrong position. You know, and so really understanding what are the characteristics that best fit. You know, the example I use is, do you want the person that's helping land the aircraft in the air traffic control tower? Do you want their other job to be selling automobiles down at the local Mercedes dealer? So the last time you bought a car, think about the characteristics that made that a good experience. Is that the same characteristics that you want to see in the air traffic controller that's landing your son or daughter's plane that's coming home for the holidays? Probably not. So what we know is different characteristics predict success in different jobs. And that's what personality is all about. It's just about identifying what characteristics best predict job performance, and then helping guide not only individuals from a career standpoint, but then also organizations, helping them filter through individuals that are a better fit for certain jobs. And so that's, I think, the best way to put a lens on the conversation is what we try to do is help organizations filter through individuals and get them in the right job buckets. And that way you've got a better chance for success, again, not only for the organization, but also for the individual.
Does personality change, once you have a personality, or once you know, kind of, because I was thinking about the retention of people and kind of how companies change over time. You know, you started to work at a startup and then it went through high growth and maybe it's into maturity. Does your personality still fit and or can a person change their personality or adapt in some type of way?
Yeah, I think there's actually, you bring up two interesting concepts. One is actually changing your personality, and we have a slightly different perspective than some. Our perspective is if you want a new personality, go get new parents and start over. and so that is no. You know, your personality, your characteristics are fairly hardwired, 17, 18 years old. You are who you are. So if you don't like it, tough. The nice thing is, though, what we know, at least in the States, you got about a $1.3 billion development industry. And so there's a lot of people out there that will help you adapt, that will help you modify, that will help you change behaviors that your personality drives. So if you're like me, and also like you, tend to be a little bit impulsive about things that we do, Well, what do we know? If it matters to our success, we've got to change our behavior. You know, and so we actually do have to pay attention to the details when it really, really matters. So there's things that we do. There's things that we have to adjust. Well, it's not natural. And so if it's something that I can blow off, if it's something that I don't have to put my full faith and effort into, yeah, I'm going to do what's natural, and I'm just going to kind of, you know, skim it. But if it's something I've got to go report to a client, if it's something I've got to stand up on stage in front of a room full of 500 people and deliver, yeah, I'm gonna really pay attention to it. You know, so my prudence or my conscientiousness is going to kick up a little bit, if you will. It's not that I'm going to score differently on a standardized measure of personality, but I've changed my behavior because I've been coached. I've got some different things that I'm doing to, in essence, counteract my natural tendencies. And that's important, especially when you think about the changing nature of work. And you bring up the topic of retention, which I think is another huge issue for 2015. You know, the talent war is going to continue, and you've got organizations, I think, this year are going to be stealing employees from each other left and right. So the question is, how do you retain? And retention is going to be driven by, can we make people feel like they still fit in our organization as it has changed, say going from that startup to now we're becoming more, you know, bureaucratic, or we're putting in rules and processes because we've become bigger. And so you take someone who wanted more of that freedom and flexibility in their environment, and all of a sudden they have to deal with a true accounting department or a true HR department. You know, how do you interact with them? How do you coach? How do you develop to where they can modify some of their behaviors, but yet they still feel like they do fit based on who they are? And that's around conversations, and you've got to have that open and honest conversation with them about their strengths and their challenges and where there may be conflicts, so that it's out in the open, versus, you know, the old saying of there's the elephant in the room. Well, who's going to just be the first to say there's an elephant in the room, versus everyone ignoring it?
So you work all around the world. You've got partners, alliance partners, and folks mm-hmm. that are pretty much four corners, right? What's, you know, outside of the United States, like, what are some of the really kind of unique things that you see out there that people think about when they think about personality in India, Australia, or wherever?
I think the most interesting things we see in the conversations that we have when we're working with our international partners, when we're out in the field ourselves, is just the ongoing question of how different are people regionally, how different are people culturally when it comes to the actual measurement of personality. And what we find time and time again, this just isn't research that we've done here at Hogan, but also that other well-validated assessment providers have done over the course of time, is from a pure measurement standpoint, people are fairly similar around the world. And that is when you look at their stress tolerance, when you look at their drive, when you look at their social skills. It doesn't matter if you're in India or Indonesia, whether you're in France or Germany, whether you're in mainland China, whether you're in Australia. Those characteristics are measured in the same way. And you see the same types of response patterns and the same, you know, prevalence of different personality characteristics. What is different, though, is what is accepted culturally. And so what people tend to get really, I think, rightfully should, concerned about is how do we interpret the results given the local cultures? And so one of the things that I think is really important for multinationals or organizations that are working cross-culturally to understand is as they take their assessments, as they take their HR business practices and apply them globally, what are the cultural nuances that they're going to need to adjust for? And so really understanding that someone who comes across on, say, a paper and pencil assessment as being outgoing and socially gregarious, as an example, in Europe, take that same individual and place them in mainland China, what differences are we likely to see in behavior just based on societal norms? And not having an understanding of that and of those differences can lead to some challenges. If you're giving that person feedback, if you're doing some development coaching, helping that individual build a development plan. And those are the conversations that we tend to get into very quickly as we talk about global assessment. The other one that we get into is candidates thinking that they should take the assessments or do whatever the tasks are from the HR and OD teams in English? Because it may be a multinational company that's based, say, in Europe or in the U.S., and so they work every day in English, but yet their native language is the local language, or their first language is the local language. The best practice, though, is always to take an assessment or any type of measurement tool in the native language, because that's where you're going to get the best measure of their characteristics. So that's an ongoing conversation we have as well, and a concern as we collect data, as we validate assessment tools out in the marketplace, is what's the local sample, what's the validation effort that's going on as well.
So this is fascinating, you know, especially like you think of something like not bribes, but you know how we in America have this real kind of ethical and moral type of whatever standards or ideal or whatever, and you get into other countries, you get into other situations, and you know they don't have the same outlook on life. They don't have the same their normal is not, you know, our normal, and so but what's great about this is that people are people. Personality is personality. Whether or not you're in Zimbabwe or in Dallas, Texas, is basically the same. That's fascinating.
And what's so interesting is it really, from a practitioner's perspective, it forces you to adjust your perspective on how the world operates. And you know, our idea of consensus-driven decision-making here in the States, you take that, say, to Denmark, and, you know, oh my gosh, you talk about consensus-driven decision-making. You know, it's not just let's have one meeting and make sure everyone's on the same page. Let's have six meetings to make sure all six meetings resulted in the same decision. And so it's validation upon validation. And if you're not accustomed to that, then, you know, problems do arise. But yet our style, I think, here in the States is one of, okay, the decision's been made, now all this action will happen. And so I think it really helps you, by knowing that up front, prepare. The second thing it does, especially if you're working on a cross-cultural team, to really seek clarification, to set ground rules, expectations of what are the outcomes. You know, especially since, think about it, the majority of these interactions these days are happening virtually. And so you may never even meet these people in person that you're working with in these other cultures or locations.
So I want to ask you about the science of personality. Y'all did a video last year. You went and kind of created a documentary. It's something that you know, if you haven't taken a look at this video, this is to the audience, go to the website, thescienceofpersonality.com, or you can do that in YouTube and find the video. And it's like something you'd see on the History Channel or on Discovery. It's not about Hogan. It's about personality. What's been the response as you've walked that out there and gotten in front of an audience? What's been the response so far?
You know, the response has been fantastic, and of course I couldn't be prouder of the team here that put this together. It was really it started as a project, as many do, with a completely different purpose, and that was one of the things that we've always taken great pride in is education. And so as part of our certification workshops, we always try to teach a section on the history of personality, the history of personality theory. And we thought, instead of doing a boring classroom lecture series, why don't we get some of the great minds and some of the traditional personality theorists to tell their stories, and to give us some overview of what personality is all about. And that's where this really started, was to be shown in more of a classroom setting. And as it evolved, it took a life of its own. And so really this is our tribute to the field of personality, but done in a way that we really felt like a non-practitioner in the field of psychology, to where just, you know, an average everyday person walking down the street could really understand how personality affects the way we relate to the world and the people in it. You know, how we work, who we love, how we other people see us. And really take this you know, somewhat, as people tend to describe it, complex idea of personality psychology and the hundreds and hundreds of years of research behind it, and boil it down into something that's really not that complex, really not that abstract, but basic. And so that's really what this documentary has done. And we've taken a lot of really good minds, a lot of good people across different consulting firms, across different areas of academia, and just ask them their thoughts on what is personality, what is derailment, what are good leaders, what are people looking for in good leaders. I think some of the best clips in the whole movie are the street interviews, both there in Manhattan and also in London, that we did. And what's amazing to me is the things that are yet to come based on the amount of footage that we have that wasn't used for this short documentary.
So you mentioned leadership. I got to get your take on the relationship between personality and leadership. What do y'all, you're sitting on, you know, 5 million results or whatever the crazy number of tests that y'all have, assessments that y'all have done in the, you know, 26-year history of Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take when you look at, like, leaders? What's the relationship between the personality traits that they might or might not have and leadership?
So, you know, it really comes down to the following. Who you are determines how you're going to lead, and that is your personality predicts your leadership style. And we can really think about your leadership style in terms of three different things. And that is, it's going to be the culture that you create around you, and that is what you reward, what you punish in terms of your team, and that's based on your own values and drivers. And so what I liken it to is you think about the leaders, if you think collectively as a leadership team, think about the culture at, say, Southwest Airlines and American Airlines. And historically, you know, Southwest, shorts, you know, short-sleeved shirts, we're running up and down the aisles, we're singing on the intercom, we're tossing peanuts and pretzels at passengers. You know, American, it was very, you know, get on the plane, put your bag in the overhead, sit down, be quiet, you know, very prim and proper. That was driven by the culture of the organization. That comes from the leadership. Second, it's going to be around the morale. It's going to be around the day-to-day activities that are driving the engagement of the workforce. And that comes from what we call the bright side and the dark side characteristics of that leader. So how do they drive engagement of the staff? And then the third characteristic is going to be the decisions that the leader makes. And again, that's personality driven. It's do I have the right people in the right role? Am I making the right decisions? But those three areas drive employee engagement, which drives business unit performance. And what we know is through all the research that we've done over all these years across every type of leadership role, every type of industry, every level in an organization, there are characteristics that better predict certain types of leadership roles than others. That doesn't mean that you can't take someone who doesn't fit a magical profile and develop them into a leader. It just means you have more work to do. And what we also know is that you're never going to find just the exact right person. You know, and so the whole idea that a leader is born, well, you can throw that one out real quick. I mean, you know, no. That's what development's for, and everybody's got development needs. And those that don't, okay, well, let's just start right there and talk about, you know, accepting ourselves.
Do you see anything that kind of shakes out as gender? You know, because we talked about countries, and
right.
You know, people are people. But I didn't ask you the kind of the next follow up to that. Well, people are people, but are men men and women women, or like how does it shake out? You know, as you look across and possibly think of gender as it relates to personality.
You know what? We don't see significant differences between male and female characteristics. Again, in terms of measuring personality, what you'll tend to find is some behavioral differences as well. And so, you know, the stereotypes tend to play out to where men are typically seen as more outwardly aggressive in terms of, say, leadership characteristics. And so, you know, at the conference room table, they're going to be the ones who are more outwardly aggressive, banging their hands on the table, et cetera, where women will tend to be, on average, more internally aggressive. And so they'll tend to work more behind the scenes to get what they want in terms of results. So those, you know, those stereotypes do tend to play out. There's been a lot of research done by others around those topics. But in terms of characteristics and capabilities, you do not see differences between genders. You don't see differences between age groups either. And that's some of the research that we're starting to do, is looking at the generational differences, especially with the millennials starting to move into some of these leadership roles. And what are we having to do, not from selecting the right person into the role, but more importantly with the millennials and the generational differences, how do we keep them motivated? You know, in the past with, say, the Generation Ys, what I call the silent generation, so our parents, you know, keeping them engaged in the workforce, keeping them motivated to continue to come to work wasn't as difficult. Just it was a different mentality in terms of values and drivers. Where with the millennials, what we're finding is, you know, it's more about them. It's the what I call the me generation. And so everything needs to be more finely attuned to what they want, more customized to them. And so I think that's the one thing that we will have to be paying attention to, is how do we continue to drive their performance to where they stay engaged and feel a part of the organization.
Right. And we got about 2 minutes left. Do you guys see any relationship between stress and personality? Like people that can either consume stress or be at peace with stress? Like, is there
almost
anything
definitely
to do with stress?
Yeah, almost definitely. There's a whole line of research on what we call leadership derailment. And looking at what happens when you put somebody under stress and pressure, and when those everyday characteristics turn into derailers. And in fact, we have an assessment just focused on leadership derailment. And, you know, it's some individuals have an ability to handle the stress and pressure better than others. And when that relief valve pops, you don't see it. You know, you don't see the steam come, you know, boiling out. Others, that relief valve is set at about 2 PSI, and it pops a lot. And when it pops big and loud. And, you know, those are the individuals, again, that as they continue to develop in their career, they're given probably constant feedback around, you know, you need to watch how you react to this. You know, your reactions are causing you to have challenges in your relationship with people, your challenges with promotion, promotability. And it is. It comes back to what we call somebody's adjustment or their stress tolerance. And it's not that it's a challenge someone can't overcome. It's just what they need to pay attention to is what are the things they're getting under their skin? What are the things that tend to set them off? And then develop some strategies to deal with that stress and pressure, whether it having backup plans, whether it be having people around them that they trust and can really feel like they can count on to help them out with difficult assignments, et cetera.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we just blew through 30 minutes. It felt like 5 minutes. Ryan, thanks for the time. Thanks for breaking down a bunch of knowledge. You can find Ryan on Twitter at @RRossHogan. So at @RRossHogan. And you can also take a look at that, the video, The Science of Personality. It is absolutely one of the best pieces of work I've seen in the space. So that's it, ladies and gentlemen. We have just blown through Monday. Ryan, thanks again. Thanks for being on.
As always, appreciate it.
Absolutely. We're going to roll out to a little Pharrell. Everyone have a wonderful day. It might seem